From Washington, this is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Steve Miller with a special recorded episode. As we begin 2021, we kick off the year with a special look back at some of the major stories that helped shape 2020.
The first major problem that arose was testing.
While history may not remember or might be a footnote about exactly why he was impeached, I think the Democrats were trying to lay the groundwork or at least plant their flag that this president deserved to be impeached.
We'll have these stories and more next. The year 2020 was defined by the COVID-19 pandemic, a disease the world knew nothing about a year ago and has killed more than 1.6 million people and devastated economies worldwide. In October of 2019, public health experts ranked the United States at the top of a pandemic preparedness index. Now, the United States leads the world in coronavirus cases and deaths. VOA's Steve Barragona looks back at a year of failures that brought the country to this point.
The failures began while the coronavirus was shutting down cities in China and Europe, says Georgetown University health law expert Lawrence Gostin.
We didn't prepare. We knew this was coming. We should have known. We should have been prepared. When it did hit, the first major problem that arose was testing.
The first test from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention did not work. Then months of shortages, backlogs, and long waits for results let the virus get out of hand. It did not help that President Donald Trump repeatedly undermined his own health officials, says University of Michigan science historian Howard Markel.
This wasn't an administration that was used to dealing with experts or not only not didn't appreciate them, didn't even respect them.
When CDC's experts recommended in April that everyone wear cloth masks, Trump read the announcement and then undercut it.
So it's voluntary. You don't have to do it. They suggest it for a period of time, but this is voluntary. I don't think I'm going to be doing it.
Masks quickly became something Democrats embraced and Republicans resisted, never mind the science. Polarized politics also muddled the difficult balance between protecting health and the economy. Trump and Republicans mostly sided with the economy. USA! Like in April, when Trump backed protests against coronavirus restrictions, but only in states with Democratic governors.
When the president of the United States urges insurrection against those measures, that's not a small thing. That is a devastating blow to the ability of our nation's leaders and public health agencies to actually fight this pandemic.
Given his opposition to prevention measures, it's perhaps not surprising that Trump caught the virus himself in late September. But it's not just leaders to blame, Gostin says.
We just seem to be, as a nation, incapable of doing the little things that would keep each other safe, like masks or distancing.
From college spring breaks in March to Thanksgiving travel in November, Americans ignoring public health warnings have kept the virus going. On the other hand, the American government has put billions of dollars into developing a coronavirus vaccine, which is now paying off, Gostin says.
And America is now in the forefront on vaccine development, along with other countries. And it could be our saving grace.
Vaccines from drug companies Pfizer and Moderna were developed faster than ever before, with others right behind them. As the year of the pandemic ends, the vaccines that may end the pandemic begin to arrive. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
From a rare Senate impeachment trial to the largest aid package in U.S. history, a tumultuous year in politics kept American lawmakers busy, even as many worked and voted remotely for the first time because of the coronavirus pandemic. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has this look back at a historic year on Capitol Hill.
The impeachment of U.S. President Donald Trump consumed Congress as 2020 began. Vice President-elect Senator Kamala Harris.
Donald Trump is going to get away with abusing his position of power.
In just the third Senate impeachment trial in American history, Trump was ultimately acquitted of charges he leveraged U.S. aid to Ukraine to target political rival Joe Biden. Chief Justice John Roberts.
President of the United States is not guilty as charged in the first article of impeachment.
Casey Bergat, George Washington University.
While history may not remember or might be a footnote about exactly why he was impeached, I think the Democrats were trying to lay the groundwork or at least plant their flag that this president deserved to be impeached.
But the coronavirus pandemic quickly overwhelmed political debate. By late March, lockdowns to stop the spread of the virus had endangered the U.S. economy, pushing Congress to pass the largest aid package in American history. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi.
Lives are at stake. This is not a time for name calling or playing politics.
Passage of the $3 trillion CARES Act was a rare moment of agreement in 2020. Casey Bergat, George Washington University.
When Congress wants to do something, even an incredibly expensive package that has a litany of provisions in it that touch basically all factors of the economy, when they want to do something, they can.
But Congress struggled to adapt to new ways of operating to avoid the virus. Molly O'Rourke, American University.
The United States Congress was one of the last institutions to make any adjustments. And even when they did, with some remote hearings and some limited remote voting, those accommodations were very temporary and definitely not fully embraced by all members of Congress.
No justice, no peace.
In June, amid nationwide protests over the death of George Floyd while in police custody, lawmakers failed to pass an ambitious police reform proposal. Republican Senator Tim Scott.
The country has given us the opportunity to lead. And my friends on the other side just said no.
Frustration continued as lawmakers failed for months to agree on another round of coronavirus aid. Democrats' $3 trillion HEROES Act failed in the Senate, where Republicans warned of overspending. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
I don't think the current situation demands a multi-trillion dollar package. So I think it should be highly targeted.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
In October, Judge Amy Coney Barrett confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court by the Republican majority Senate against Democratic objections. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
The Republican Senate majority decided to thwart the will of the people and confirm a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court in the middle of a presidential election.
That election decided the next occupant of the White House, Democrat Joe Biden. But 2020 closed with more uncertainty on Capitol Hill. Runoff elections in January for Georgia's two Senate seats will decide which party will control the Senate for the next 2 years. Katherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. President Donald Trump secured diplomatic normalization agreements between Israel and Arab countries during his term, but he is leaving office amid renewed tension with Iran following the assassination of its top nuclear scientist. White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekaswar looks at Trump's legacy in the Middle East and the diplomatic challenges for President-elect Joe Biden's incoming administration.
The Abraham Accords normalizing Israel's relations with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain signed in September is widely seen as President Donald Trump's most significant foreign policy achievement.
After decades of division and conflict, we mark the dawn of a new Middle East.
The Accords altered the decades-long regional perception that Arab-Israeli peace cannot be achieved without first addressing statehood for Palestinians. They also reflect Israel's improving ties with its Arab neighbors as they face Iran, a mutual enemy weakened by Trump's maximum pressure campaign of sanctions. President-elect Joe Biden has said he supports more countries recognizing Israel with a caveat for the Palestinians' plight.
Also, I believe that Israel has to be prepared to work toward a genuine two-state solution.
Biden has promised to return to the 2015 JCPOA agreement, which Trump withdrew from in 2018. The deal suspends Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief. The plan may be complicated by the recent assassination of Iran's top nuclear scientist. The White House has not condemned the attack, which Tehran blames on Israel. Alex Fatanka is the director of the Iran program at the Middle East Institute.
What I suspect will happen is the Iranians are going to keep restrain themselves the way they did after the assassination of Qasem Soleimani and wait for the Biden administration to come in and see if they can cut some kind of deal with him, although that will be a very thorny process in itself. But the fact is Iran cannot afford a military conflict at this point with U.S. or Israel, or for that matter, anybody else.
While Trump prefers bilateral relations often based on personal ties with foreign leaders, Biden is expected to adopt a more multilateral approach in engaging allies. Still, analysts do not expect a fundamental change in U.S. policy in the region. Marissa Korma is the program manager of the Middle East program at the Wilson Center.
But certainly a different tone and different type of engagement. I think the people, particularly those who are active in human rights and democracy in the region, will very much look forward to those two issues becoming important once again for the United States, not to promote aggressively, but at least to support.
Like Trump, Biden has pledged to end forever wars in the Middle East and Afghanistan, focusing only on Al-Qaeda and Islamic State terror groups, and ending support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen. Analysts warn that a decreased military presence in the region has repercussions. Natasha Hall is a senior fellow with the Middle East program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
That could be a lessened influence in the Middle East, and it could be resurgent ISIS, it could be our enemies coming into play in the Middle East. So there's a lot of things to consider that that the president is going to have to deal with within the coming year.
In his early months, Biden will likely focus on the domestic pandemic response, including vaccine distribution, delegating much of foreign policy to his pick for Secretary of State. Anthony Blinken has worked with Biden for nearly 20 years, including on Middle East policies, with mixed results in Egypt, Iraq, Syria, and Libya. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
At the United Nations, 4 years of America First has sometimes meant America alone. President-elect Joe Biden has said his administration will reassert the nation's historic role as a global leader, leaving UN diplomats and observers hopeful that America will return to multilateralism and engagement at the world body. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir has that story.
When he introduced his top national security and foreign policy officials last month, President-elect Joe Biden said they reflect that America is back.
Ready to lead the world, not retreat from it. Once again, sit at the head of the table. Ready to confront our adversaries and not reject our allies, ready to stand up for our values.
At the United Nations, the Trump administration has slashed hundreds of millions of dollars in funding to programs, including peacekeeping missions, Palestinian refugees, and for women's reproductive health. It pulled out of UN agencies like the World Health Organization and quit a major accord on climate action. Biden could win some international goodwill by quickly undoing some of Trump's policies. Experts say UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres will likely have more latitude with the new U.S. administration.
I think we're going to see Guterres laying out some pretty ambitious plans in the year ahead on how to fight climate change and how to fight inequality, because in a sense he's liberated to promote ambitious ideas for international cooperation after a period in which he had to be enormously cautious to avoid offending Trump.
Biden's nominee to be UN ambassador and member of his cabinet is career diplomat Linda Thomas Greenfield.
America is back. Multilateralism is back. Diplomacy is back.
Diplomats have publicly and privately welcomed her nomination.
We think that she'll bring to bear her vast experience, over three decades of diplomacy. And that's what we need it now. Now we need diplomatic skills, maturity, and knowing that we have a common cause, all of us.
Whether to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal will quickly test the new administration.
The president-elect recognizes that this is going to be a tough road ahead. If Iran were to enter into strict compliance with the 2015 deal, then the U.S. will rejoin the deal, but only as the beginning of follow-on negotiations. And that's where the difficulties are going to come.
At the United Nations, China moved to expand its influence as the Trump administration pulled back.
Biden, I think, will want to limit Chinese influence, but does know that in some ways it's necessary to work with Beijing.
Both allies and adversaries are eager to see how Biden and his UN envoy will translate this new U.S. leadership at the United Nations. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, New York.
President-elect Joe Biden has vowed to stand up to autocratic leaders like Russian President Vladimir Putin and says one of his first priorities will be to reach out to NATO allies to repair relations. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain looks at expected changes in U.S. policy.
President Donald Trump's friendly rapport with Russian President Vladimir Putin and his refusal to criticize him have long confounded observers. Michael Kimmage of the German Marshall Fund.
I think it does go back to Donald Trump's business career and certain ambitions that he had in 2016 that were not political in nature, but rooted in the business.
There is little ambiguity about President-elect Joe Biden's approach, who vows to stand up to Putin and to repair a NATO alliance that he believes was damaged by President Trump. The president has complained that NATO allies like Germany are taking advantage of the United States and should contribute more money for their defense. Some experts say that Trump's words were more destabilizing to the alliance than his actions. Again, Michael Kimmage of the German Marshall Fund.
Where Trump was dangerous and remains dangerous for the transatlantic alliance, it's more on the terrain of credibility. He, as you mentioned, referred to NATO on the campaign trail in 2016 as obsolete. That's not something he acted upon as president, but he certainly said it.
European leaders have thus far welcomed Biden's victory, especially in Berlin. Germany's defense minister says the U.S. remains Europe's most important ally. German Defense Minister Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer.
Without America's nuclear and conventional capabilities, Germany and Europe cannot protect themselves. These are the sobering facts.
And when it comes to U.S.-Russia relations, experts say Trump wanted to improve them, but the domestic investigation into his campaign's ties with Moscow constrained him. That, analysts say, will not necessarily be true for Biden. Once again, Michael Kimmage of the German Marshall Fund.
There was deep suspicion across the American population and across Congress, Republicans and Democrats alike, were deeply mistrustful of anything Trump was trying to do with Russia. So in the end, he accomplished almost nothing where Russia was concerned. I think Biden has a very different landscape to play in.
Other analysts say they do not expect much change in Washington-Moscow ties as long as Putin is leading Russia. James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation.
Putin has found very little desire to shift his policies. Absent that, I don't think there's a lot of space. I don't think anybody has confidence in another Russian reset.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says Russia continues to violate the territorial integrity of Georgia and Ukraine and continues its military buildup in Crimea, all challenges that NATO and the Biden administration will face in 2021. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Some made us dream with their movies. Others made us dance and filled our hearts with music. Others influenced our lives with their writing and designs. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports on some of the people who passed away in 2020.
Among the movie actors lost in 2020, Sean Connery, who died at 90.
The charismatic Scottish movie legend shot to international stardom playing the first James Bond.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Chadwick Boseman, another superstar, also passed away. He was 43 and was best known for his title role in Black Panther. The list also includes veteran Bollywood actor and one of India's most well-known exports to Hollywood, Irfan Khan. Two-time Oscar winner and Gone with the Wind movie star Olivia de Havilland died this year at 104. She was one of the last surviving cast members of the classic 1939 film.
Gone with the Wind was the happiest experience of my entire career.
Lost from the music world,
rock and roll is alive forever.
Rock and roll Hall of Famers Little Richard and Bill Withers.
I remember
Grammy winners John Prine,
things I can't forget,
and Kenny Rogers. An actor-singer, Rogers preferred to be known as a country singer despite his crossover music success.
I think country music is the white man's rhythm and blues. It's where the pain is.
The sudden death of basketball legend Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter in a helicopter crash shocked the world in 2020, prompting an outpouring of grief. Another sudden loss felt around the world, Argentine soccer giant Diego Armando Maradona, who suffered a heart attack. Three former presidents also died in 2020. Former presidents of Ghana, Jerry Rawlings, of Mali, Amadou Toumani Touré, and most recently, France's Valéry Giscard d'Estaing. Other public figures, U.S. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a legal and feminist icon, died at 87. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
As we approach the end of the year, it's always nice to look back and reflect on entertainment. And what better way to do that than invite one of my great friends, one of our great hosts here at Voice of America, Larry London, host of Border Crossings, onto the line to talk music. Larry, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Steve. Thank you for that very nice introduction. I really appreciate it. It's been a very, very interesting year in music and entertainment this past year, having to deal with, of course, the pandemic, which has definitely impacted the music industry, the touring industry. Tours were suspended this past year, and a lot of artists delayed the release of their music due to the pandemic. So it's been a difficult past 12 months.
You know, what have been some of the big hits in 2020 that's, you know, surprised you and you know, really took off in the industry?
Well, I think the biggest surprise is the success of the K-pop sound, with the girl groups like Blackpink and, of course, BTS having the success that they've had. People are wondering, what is driving this bus? BTS had the number one song not too long ago, and the number one album. Their newest album is called B.
Shoes on, get up in the morning, cup of milk, let's rock and roll. Kink out, kick the drum, running on like a Rolling Stone. Sing song when I'm walking home, jump up to the top of LeBron.
And it's their second number one album this past year. Map of the Soul 7 was also a number one album. I think also there's been collaborations. If you go down the list, song after song after song is featuring a collaboration. It's two people now. You've got Justin Bieber and Chance the Rapper. You've got Megan Thee Stallion and Beyonce. You've got Marshmello and Halsey. You've got a list that just goes on and on forever. It's all about collaborations these days. I think that's another trend. Of course, EDM, electronic dance music, remains quite popular. And hip-hop and R&B are finally getting the respect in the music industry that they deserve. Artists like Travis Scott and The Weeknd.
Now, you bring up The Weeknd. Now, The Weeknd had the Song of the Year, and he's also going to headline the halftime show at the 2021 Super Bowl.
And he was just nominated for the Most American Music Awards. He won a few of those, and his hit Blinding Lights was named by Billboard as the Song of the Year, as you mentioned. But one thing that has shocked a lot of people is the fact the Grammys have totally overlooked The Weeknd. He's not nominated in a single category.
Maybe you can show me how to love. Maybe I'm going through a drought.
this year has been unlike so many in the past. So how have new artists emerged on the scene? You know, going back to Justin Bieber, right? He was found on YouTube. Is it still kind of the similar path where, you know, they throw up videos online and that's how they're discovered?
Yes, exactly. It seems like with the video platform TikTok and YouTube and all of the various different social media platforms these days, the kids are able to discover the new music before the rest of the mainstream population do. And once the kids start asking for it, radio stations start playing it. And once the kids start buying it, of course, everybody takes notice of the sales. And so there's a lot of artists out there who are getting discovered through other mediums other than just the radio airplay that helps to launch their careers. There's been a lot of very new artists who have done very well in the last year. Billie Eilish comes to mind immediately. She was the new artist of the year at the American Music Awards. And of course, she got discovered several years ago doing social media music online. A lot of artists do cover songs and they get picked up that way. And there's just a lot of them out there who are, there's so many, the list goes on. Megan Thee Stallion, Ava Max, Doja Cat, Josh685, and then there's this new kid who's been number one on the charts for the past 6 weeks. His name is 24K Golden, and I just interviewed him for Border Crossings. He's a really nice guy. He's 20 years old, 6 weeks with his new song, Mood, but he was big on TikTok before he got discovered. Why you always in the mood? Around like I'm brand new. I ain't trying to tell you what to do, but try to play cool. Baby, I ain't playing by your rules. Everything look better with a view. Why you always? That is just fantastic. Larry London, you can catch him on VOA 1 The Hits, as well as Border Crossing. Larry, it is always a pleasure to have you in the studio, or in this case, online, to talk about entertainment and music. Thank you. You too, Steve. I appreciate you giving me a chance to say hi to everybody.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
To no one's surprise, the Cuban regime's commitment to dialogue with peaceful young demonstrators who recently gathered, hundreds strong, to protest the lack of freedom of expression in Cuba was short-lived. Less than 24 hours after a meeting between protest representatives and the Vice Minister of Culture, Fernando Rojas, the regime threw away a chance to respect the rights of the Cuban people. Rojas denounced the protesters and dismissed their concerns over censorship and police attacks on independent artists. Many of the protesters are members of the San Isidro movement, a loose collective of writers, artists, musicians, and other citizens who are outraged by the strictures continually placed upon them by the regime, including a law requiring that any artistic activity be registered with the government. More recently, the demonstrators have been protesting the summary sentencing of prominent members of the group, among them the musician Denis Solis Gonzalez, for expressing himself independently. The regime has repeatedly targeted Solis for exercising his freedom of expression by denouncing human rights abuses in Cuba and arrested him on November 9th. Cuban authorities held Solis incommunicado for 3 days before sentencing him to 8 months in prison on the dubious charge of contempt. Cuban authorities arrested dozens of journalists and human rights defenders seeking information about his case or calling for his release. Despite the harsh response by the government, protests concerning his case and the lack of free expression in Cuba continued, followed by more attacks and arrests by the police. Members of the international community have expressed objections to the repression, including Amnesty International. The U.S. State Department took a strong stand. In a written statement, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said, "The United States strongly condemns the Cuban regime's harassment of activists peacefully protesting the imprisonment of human rights defender Denis Solis Gonzalez. We urge the Cuban government to dismiss this unjust sentence and release him without condition." The United States stands in solidarity with the Cuban people, and we will continue to denounce these flagrant abuses against Cubans exercising their rights, said Secretary Pompeo. We call on democratic partners around the world to raise their voices and make respect for human rights a prerequisite for any dealing with the Castro regime.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.